The Moneyball government concept gets a new boost. The pay-for-success model works like this. Private contractors pay for social services up front, and the government pays them when their work proves to be successful. John Kamensky is senior research fellow at the IBM Center for the Business of Government and writing about this issue under the title, Can We Focus on What Works? So, John, a couple of things that I found tremendously refreshing about what you're writing here. First of all, getting off the waste, fraud, and abuse line and getting to the what works and let's fund it line instead. You were at a hearing in the Senate on wasteful spending in the federal government. What did that hearing trigger in your mind to want to start writing about this? Welcome back, and thanks for coming on today, John.
Thank you very much for the invitation, Francis. The hearing a couple weeks ago in the Senate just felt like a reprise of stories I've heard for the past 20 or 30 years, and it's sort of like, well, there's got to be something that moves the ball forward.
The idea of the change in dialogue came from, you write, the citation of big computer projects that failed, the GAO high risk list, and took you, in your own mind at least, to the idea of evidence-based government. I mentioned the Moneyball term at the beginning. What was the genesis of this movement, and how has it changed as you've watched it, John?
Well, I think the movement started a number of years ago under the rubric of program evaluation, but that was seen as almost like this academic sidearm in different agencies. And the Office of Management and Budget over the past 6 years has moved it more towards being linked to the performance movement, so that the two disciplines are beginning to actually work together. And so the performance movement of measuring and tracking performance and more of a real-time basis is being aligned with the evidence-based, let's study things carefully to make sure that we can understand the causality of why something is happening. And the two together, I think, are going to be very powerful.
You're right. There's a movement underway across the U.S. to do just that, referring to what works and expanding those programs. There are advocacy groups, foundations, states, and localities promoting this idea. Some call it evidence-based government, Moneyball government, pay for success. There is legislation that you reference in our Congress right now on Capitol Hill, but I haven't heard too much about it. Is it making its way through, or is it just one of those dozens or hundreds of bills that exists and doesn't usually seem to make much progress?
Well, they were just introduced recently, the past few weeks, so there hasn't been any committee action on them that I'm aware of. But what is interesting is that the legislation was introduced in a bipartisan manner in both the House and the Senate. And that's a rare breed these days.
So we lay this out this way. You write, the Urban Institute's definition of pay for success is a type of performance-based contracting used to support the delivery of targeted, high-impact, preventative social services in which intervention at an early stage can reduce the need for higher-cost services in the future. So we're looking at issues here, it sounds like, where there's a demonstrated return on investment. Early activity pays off at reduced costs later on. Am I on the right track?
Yes. And what's really interesting is there is an example that's underway in Baltimore. There's a project called Green and Healthy Homes. And the objective of the project is to reduce the number of children that go into the hospital for emergency services because of an asthma-related attack. It turns out that science shows that most of these attacks occur at home. So they're having social workers and public health people go into the homes to help ensure that the homes are, you know, asthma-proofed in terms of clean carpets or removing, waste droppings from rats or whatever it might be. And the thesis is that if you can do that, that the kids won't go into the hospital and that it will substantially reduce the cost of emergency health care services. But the problem right now is that it's not like you can use Medicaid money to clean carpets. But if you can use Medicaid money to achieve an outcome, which is reducing the number of hospital admissions for kids with asthma attacks. So the outcome, or the paying for success, the success is keeping the kids out of the hospital. And it's up to the providers with a theory that if you clean the house, that's going to make a difference.
John Kaminsky is Senior Research Fellow at the IBM Center for the Business of Government, writing in GovExec under the title, Can We Focus on What Works? And writing about something called evidence-based government, Moneyball government, pay for success, and other names attached to it. I wonder if one of the problems here, John, might be a typical government problem of silos or fiefdoms, because the way you just laid the asthma example out in Baltimore makes perfect sense. My sense is, though, and no disrespect to the folks at Medicaid, and I'm not speaking directly about them, if money goes to a particular outcome that's not necessarily under the typical jurisdiction of a program, it's possible that money gets moved someplace else eventually and generates some resistance from the folks from whom that money has been moved. Is that something that we've had examples of yet, or is that something that you agree, based on your experience, could be a possible threat that needs to be mitigated as something like this proceeds, or am I being a little bit too cynical?
I think that this is probably not an issue that's worth worrying about at this point. Right now, the challenge is how do you solve a problem like asthma, and it cannot be done through the healthcare system. It may be done through the public health preventive services housing system, but the two systems are designed for different kinds of programs. So what this does is it creates a flexibility to be able to move back and forth so that the focus is on the problem or the child having an asthma attack as opposed to the many different stovepipe programs that exist in government. So this mechanism in some cases is seen as a strong accountability because nobody gets paid unless there is success. But the other thing is it creates a lot of flexibility to be able to solve root cause problems that may not be in the purview of the particular policy domain in which the funding occurs.
You're right, because the concept is so new, there's no single proven approach for structuring pay-for-success projects. While this offers broad opportunities for innovation, projects to date have been administratively complex arrangements that are not yet scalable or necessarily repeatable. What have been the roadblocks there, and are those, are in your view, growing pains, or are these pretty significant issues that need to be addressed, John?
I think they're largely growing pains. When you start, I mean, what you need is you need actuaries, you need lawyers, you need people that have the ability to share data between systems. You have to be able to have, you know, the right kind of studies that have been done in the past to show that these particular interventions work. So there's piecing together of things across a lot of professional disciplines of, you know, legal and actuarial and housing and preventive health and all this kind of stuff. So the complexity comes in trying to bring a lot of different bodies of knowledge together to sort this out, and that it's going to be different for reducing, the strategy will be different for reducing recidivism among teenagers that have been released from prison, or reducing homelessness. So each one of these different policy areas is going to require a different mix of these kinds of professionals. And that's why I'm saying it's not going to be a one-size-fits-all. It's going to be an experimentation approach. But the good news is there's a lot of room to experiment and try things.
It also sounds like those are the kinds of things, John, that the first 10 times are extremely difficult. The next 20 are difficult, but less so. And the 100 after that, it's easier. And then the next 500 are easier still.
And that whole notion of scalability is what everybody, I think, is hoping for.
Is that where this becomes really extremely effective, when there's a critical mass of replicability and this concept can be used over and over and over again on a much easier, much quicker basis?
Yes. And in fact, this whole notion of evidence-based decisions and stuff comes out of the healthcare community. About 20 years ago, they came up with evidence-based medicine. And as they began replicating and testing these things, they're finding what works, and then that's being done throughout the healthcare system. So your scenario sounds like that could be the potential direction for this.